I've been playing outdoors since I was a kid, standing by the front door at around 2 years old, hollering, "Side, side," trying to get my mom to let me go play outside. Now, after 30-plus years working in the outdoor business, I'm dropping insider conversations every week with brand leaders, guides, marketers, CEOs, and others that make the outdoor business a trillion-dollar juggernaut that drives product innovation, revenue, and public policy for everything outdoors. I'm Rick Sayes. Welcome to the Outdoor Biz Podcast, available wherever you get your podcasts.
In this episode, we are going to talk about Tim P. Wood and all of the contributions made to lean manufacturing and how we can learn from those contributions in the safety world. That's right. We're going to talk about that in this episode. All right, everybody. Before we get into today's topic, I want to remind everybody, if your business is reopening after any kind of closure due to COVID, or you've continued to remain open, but you're struggling with how to mark your facilities to ensure physical distancing and relay important information about safety and health as it relates to COVID, I want you to go visit our friends over at Mighty Line Floor Tape. Mighty Line has some great products for you to mark your floors, whether it be the stand here, the 6 feet distancing, or just floor tape to denote lanes of travel. They have everything you need to mark your facility. So hit the link in the show notes, visit our friends at Mighty Line Floor Tape. They are incredible partners in safety. I can't thank them enough for their support of the podcast. Again, Mighty Line Tape for all of your floor marking needs. All righty. Yep, I mentioned it. Tim P. Wood. If you haven't figured out by now, those of you who know what I'm getting at. But if you don't know and you tried to Google that name, and it's not a person, so it's really a mnemonic. It's a device used to remember a bunch of words, right? And we're going to go through Tim P. Wood and break it down for you. We're going to talk about how our understanding of value and waste in processes in, you know, like manufacturing or business processes in lean purview, right? We're going to talk about waste, how we can actually remember this when it comes to workplace safety. We're going to talk about how the 8 wastes in business can actually not just contribute to loss of revenue, loss of productivity and efficiency, but also how these 8 wastes can introduce or increase risk in our business. And so if you've listened for some time now, you'll know that, you know, I'm going to continue this journey on bridging this gap between the safety industry and, well, frankly, everybody else. Look, we need to learn and understand these concepts and how safety fits in with those, integrates with them, because it's going to be so much easier for us to go to non-safety people, pretty much everybody else, right? And get them on board. And we do that by, well, first us getting on board their ship. So that's the key, is how can we integrate safety more naturally, different ways to what they're already doing every day, right? And so this is another opportunity for us. And when we talk about lean safety, I even hesitate using the S word, right? Safety. It's all lean. It's just, they're all lean principles. When we talk about reducing risk or reducing the opportunity for an injury or an illness and how we go about reducing that risk, you know, they're the same lean principles involved in like eliminating a quality defect or waste in a process, which we're going to get into the 8 wastes. Okay, so Tim P. Wood. So the 8 wastes are 1, transportation, 2, inventory, 3, motion, 4, people, 5, waiting, 6, overprocessing, 7, overproduction, 8, defects. So we're going to get into each one of these letters. That spells out Tim P. Wood, so now you kind of get that name, right? We're going to go through all 8 wastes, and we're going to attempt to make a connection to safety and health, how not only do those eight wastes introduce waste in a business process, but also how they can increase the likelihood of injury or illness, increasing risk. So when you go along with a couple of quality engineers, some, you know, machine operators, and some managers, and you know, they drag safety along, you understanding the eight wastes and how to look for these and being able to, you know, make the connection to one of these wastes and an increased risk of some kind, that's going to help bring value to, you know, your participating in the exercise. It's also going to give you an idea of how you can use some of these other lean tools, this just being one of them, to identify potential root causes to or contributing factors to incidents that have happened. You know, when you start looking at transportation, motion, waiting, overprocessing or overproduction, things like that, when you start looking at in terms that managers and supervisors and workers understand, you're going to be able to speak their language. You're going to be able to make a meaningful connection between safety and what it is that we're expecting workers to do every day. So that's sort of my goal here. And you tell me at the end if I was successful or not. But let's get into the first one, transportation. Now, transportation of work or work in progress, finished goods, information or services. So remember, it's not just physical transportation, it's transportation of information as well. And we'll go over some examples, but transportation, you know, a waste in transportation. Maybe you have a poor value stream design, right? Maybe, you know, the way that we process our products and services requires it to be moved around more than it needs to be. If we were to either consolidate process points or eliminate some processes by getting some materials already processed in some way, shape, or form for us. So that's an opportunity on the business side. When we think of the safety risk, you know, we could be looking at long distances between two different processes, even under one roof, or going from one building to another, whether it's right next door on the same property or down the road and around the corner. Think about the increased risk to personnel. We're physically having to move material with, even if it's just a hand truck or a pallet jack or powered industrial truck or tractor trailer, something like that. So reducing that waste, right? The need to transport work in progress, finished goods, information or services unnecessarily, that will in turn reduce risk, right? So that's an example of what we're talking about. So I think you kind of get the idea where we're headed now, right? Is how we're going to take each one of these wastes, these eight wastes, and we're going to look at it through the lens of risk. Poor facility and office layouts could be another, you know, possible cause of transportation as a waste, okay? Poor facility and office layouts also introduce risk to workers running into each other, not having enough clearance or room to move certain things around. You may have to bring certain materials through an area that, even if it's just once a day or a couple of times a week, it's not normally carried or brought, transported through that area. So you increase that kind of risk as well. It wasn't really designed for that. Poor organization and housekeeping is another possible cause of increased transportation. We just don't have the room over here because we haven't really organized this area very well. And maybe that's where 5S comes in. That's another great lean principle we can use for safety. Don't fall for the 6S, by the way. People will say it's 5S's plus safety. No, safety's already built into each one of those other S's. It's an integral part. So that's another episode. Getting back to Tim P. Wood and the eight wastes, you know, housekeeping and organization, that could be introducing additional risk that requires transportation. So now you got two risks. You got increased transportation or unnecessary transportation, and you have poor, you know, organization and housekeeping issues. So you could be tackling two types of risks at once by eliminating the waste of additional or excess transportation. Of course, I kind of touched on this, traveling when not required, too many signatures required, too many. Well, I talked about information and services. You know, when you have to get sign-offs on processing parts or materials too many. You know, we talk a lot about simplifying processes. When you simplify complex processes, you reduce risk. In this case, we're talking about transportation. We're talking about a risk of making a mistake or skipping a step, which puts the business at risk and maybe some certification risk. But in safety, we are still in the transportation, you know, headspace, right? We're still talking about, okay, somebody physically having to move, you know, material or information from one place to another unnecessarily. Can we do electronic sign-offs or communications? Can we simplify all of those things? So let's move on to inventory. Inventory, excess inventory in this case, waste, as a waste. Inventory, that includes stock of raw material, work in progress, finished goods, information. So just having excess inventory laying around can introduce risk, right? So obviously it ties into that housekeeping organization piece. You have limited space. So now we have to store all this somewhere. And we have to continuously send workers into that area and out of that area with, like I said, hand trucks, pallet jacks, forklifts, doesn't matter. But we're increasing travel into this area where we keep excess inventory because we don't, you know, have an offsite warehouse. We don't have somebody else handle this, or we don't have just-in-time manufacturing where we make what we need to make in smaller batches or something like that. So that's what sort of, you know, a lean engineer and a quality engineer would look at, is how we reduce inventory as a waste. We can look at it the same way, is to say, it not only is it in reducing waste, floor space, and wasting time, but how many injuries and incidents or violations, I'm using air quotes, maybe we haven't been cited, but maybe when you go and do your inspections, you write up storing things across the little line on the aisle that we made because we don't have space for stuff. So reducing risk and just headaches in general, this is where we can bring value to this process of going along on these, you know, Gemba walks or these hazard hunts or whatever you want to call them with managers and workers, and how we can kind of contribute to, you know, in language that they understand, by saying, hey, by reducing excess inventory, we're reducing this much risk. And you have some quantifier to attach to that. You could also have, you know, quality issues that lead to excess inventory, that, you know, lead to the buildup of parts or communications, things like that, because you're not making it right the first time. And that's where somebody from the quality team and the training team can come in and go, okay, well, maybe we don't have good work processes or very clear work instructions. Well, you need to be a part of that as a safety professional. Do the work instructions also address the safety steps that are needed? Or more often than not, what I've seen is we create work instructions and then safety comes along after the fact and has to create a separate document that looks and feels completely different and is detached from the work instruction. And it's, you know, hanging there and it's called, that's right, it's called JSA. And it sometimes can conflict with the work instruction. And now we have another error trap. The worker has to do something per the work instruction, but the JSA says, I have to do this. They're going to make a decision most of the time, and that could lead to an incident or increased risk. So, you know, look, that's a long way to get around, you know, to inventory. We could be having excess inventory because we're not doing something right the first time. We have quality issues, and that leads to excess inventory of materials that we need to keep on hand, when it could be just poorly written work instructions. And then that's an opportunity for us to, remember, reduce the number of steps in a process, bake the JSA steps and safety requirements into the work instructions in one easy to read document. So, you know, that's where I was going with that one. But look, you know, we have all sorts of reasons why we have excess inventory. And a lot of business managers and leaders, they'll justify, like, oh, well, we need to keep all this because we purchase it in bulk. Well, I don't know, set up a relationship with your suppliers to say, we're going to purchase this much, but you're going to only send us this much at a time, and you hold on to the rest. Or, you know, we have a warehouse somewhere that we lease, or I don't know, some way of managing that in the immediate work area, that excess inventory. All right, so T and I, and now we're going to get to Motion. Now, motion includes movement. It's often confused with transportation, but we're talking about people, equipment, or electronic data to pick, place, or remove items, okay? So where transportation, we were concerned with transportation of work in progress, finished goods, information, or services. We're talking here about people, equipment, or electronic data to pick, place, or remove items. So some symptoms that you may have: motion as a waste, a lot of work movements, right? Excess walking, stretching, bending, reaching to get parts and pieces and things like that. Unorganized workplace. Here's housekeeping and 5S creeping back up on us again, right? Searching for items that you need to build this, you know, during this build. Additional time to complete tasks. You know, extra movements or clicks or keystrokes, right? When we're talking about electronic data. But these are all symptoms. And hey, you know, we know that, you know, ergonomics plays a big role in this, that, you know, things that I need repeatedly, constantly throughout the day, throughout my work shift, I should keep as close to me as possible, right? So just having good work organization layout, that's going to reduce motion as a waste. So you being an expert at, you know, we'll go back to 5S about workplace organization, making sure that motion is not a waste and making sure that associates are as comfortable as possible and don't have all these working movements or excess stretching, bending, reaching. That's going to be a big one. This probably of the mnemonic, you know, Tim P. Wood, motion is probably the most familiar that safety professionals go to on this. Okay. So it's really easy to pick up on whether or not you have this as a waste because of poor work method design, organization, lack of training, or, you know, lack of processes altogether. So let's move on to the middle initial P. We're talking about people, right? People waste involves probably not what you think about. It involves not utilizing and following up on the ideas and thoughts and contributions of the workers. So this is a huge one that we talk a lot about in the safety profession, but we don't associate it with this. And remember, movement, when we talk about eight wastes, you know, movement's one of the easiest ones, or motion, right? So people, we often refer to this in the safety world as engagement, HR world as well. Are we engaging our workers enough to get their feedback and their buy-in? So symptoms, you know, how do you know you have this as a waste? You know, we're not tapping into our people power enough, right? Well, you could have low morale, enthusiasm about, you know, working there, them just not offering ideas or suggestions. If you have a suggestion program, especially a safety suggestion program, you get nobody suggesting anything. It's in general, not just safety, but I think as, you know, a company culture, we probably underutilize our people and their ideas, right? So that's another symptom, them not participating in suggestion programs. Lack of commitment to activities. We can't get anybody to volunteer for like improvement or problem-solving activities, Kaizen events, Gembas, things like that, SMED events, if you still do those. There could be frustration among the workforce, poor teamwork, you know, just all of those indications could be that it's a top-down type of approach. We prescribe things to our workers. We don't try to draw from their expertise and get their participation. So, you know, look, not asking, not listening, you know, their skills or training don't match their role very well. Poor communication between managers and teams, you know, not sharing good practices, not recognizing and rewarding good ideas. All of those things can be causing your issues. And we know what that does for safety. How likely is it that one of the workers is going to speak up about a safety concern, right? So you have increased risk there because, hey, they don't listen to me anyway. I tried to tell them that there's a better way of doing this job over there. It would save them thousands. And they were like, nah, we don't. It's worked like this for 20 years. We're not going to mess with it. Well, I'm not going to tell them about that guard either. You know I can avoid that. So, you know, you could have some issues with safety, some increased risk from underutilization of people. So that's the P, so keep that one in mind. W, that's waiting. Waiting for equipment to complete work, waiting for material deliveries, waiting for support to resolve issues like maintenance or technicians, right? And what do we know about people who have to wait a lot? Well, there's two types of people. I like to boil everything down, not to be a reductionist or oversimplify this, but look, you've got people that will sit around and wait. They'll just leave and go, you know, do something else or, you know, go to the break room or whatever. Or you have people that'll just take matters into their own hands. And when we're talking about, I'm tired of waiting for maintenance to come and fix this, or I'm tired of waiting for this replacement tool, we know that the people that will take matters into their own hands, best intentions, yes, but we know that can increase risk. So how you're able to find or determine whether or not you have waiting as a waste is, you know, some of the symptoms: lack of information, equipment, parts, support. Like, go to your maintenance folks. How fast are they able to close a work order and address, you know, issues that get reported? How many PMs are still open or past due, right? What percent of PMs are past due? You know, those are symptoms of, okay, we're keeping a lot of workers, you know, waiting, or they're just working when PMs are overdue or work orders have been submitted to fix equipment and tools or whatever and processes, and they're still working. And I don't see any documented interim protective measures put in place until maintenance can get to it. So that's just one. It sounds like I'm beating up on maintenance folks, but, you know, that's just one area you can look at. You know, of course, you know, how much equipment is broken, red tags. If there are if it looks like Christmas out on your production floor, right, because of all the red tags hanging on everything, that might be an indication that we've got a lot of people waiting for support, and that could lead to problems. Non-attendance at meetings, right? People that aren't showing up, they're not showing up to meetings because it could be we're underutilizing people. They think, why bother go to the meeting? They're not going to listen to me anyway. Or it could be that they're waiting for materials or processes to complete, or they're waiting on other things, and that increases frustration as well. And, you know, look, we want to make sure that we don't have any causes of these problems, right? Not single piece flow, unreliable processes or quality issues, things like that. So as a safety professional, sometimes if we want to really address a systemic problem of workers using, you know, defective tools and equipment, maybe it isn't just coaching them on not to do it. They're just tired of waiting for the things to be fixed. So we have to dig deeper and go into maintenance schedules, maintenance staffing, maintenance budget, how we allocate those resources to fix those things, which will then take care of the issue of associates working with, you know, defective tools and equipment or being injured due to their use. So that's waiting. Overprocessing, that's anything more than the customer requires to complete the job. That's typically how it's defined in lean manufacturing purview, right? So overprocessing, doing more than the standard, right? Polishing, painting, packaging, things like that, consuming more resources than needed, generating more information than what is required, right? Excess analysis or detail. When you have, you know, a bunch of different reviews and approvals than are needed for a simple process, all of that introduces something else. It introduces frustration. It increases waiting. So here we see, if we have waiting as a waste, one of the causes could be that we're simply overprocessing, which now that waiting moves into overprocessing as a waste. If you kind of follow me here, I don't want to lose you in the acronym or the mnemonic, but the overprocessing is anything more than what is required to complete the job. So maybe we don't have the right standards in place. We either don't have any, they're not used or outdated because we've improved or added on features to a product or material that we haven't kept our standards up to date. So we're still over processing when we don't need to. Maybe there's unclear specifications. Really good sign here is if you see two workers doing the same job, but they're doing it differently, right? Different set of standards. That's a good indication that we probably don't have really clear specs or standards in place, which leads to overprocessing and increased waiting, and then, of course, waste, right? So maybe they're unclear on customer requirements. This is a good one. In some, it's industry-driven, right? I know in aviation, you'll have, you know, you've got FAA, you've got some international standards, but customers, that would have their own crazy standards that go well away and be above and beyond. And the workers, they would literally have to stop and go, okay, I need the work instruction on this. And because of one, it was required, but one manufacturer would require additional processing that another manufacturer didn't require. Maybe because not the other manufacturer was, you had lower standards, they may do some of that additional processing on their own or have somebody else doing it. You know, we're just not required to do it as part of our work contract with that customer. So that can introduce some confusion. That's where communication and understanding and getting them involved in the process, engaging our people power, right? The P, that helps with this. All right. So overprocessing. And there's another one. There's another O. It's overproduction. That's producing anything more than the customer requires. That's considered waste in lean manufacturing. Well, we also know that that introduces additional wear and tear on machines and equipment and tools. It consumes more raw materials and support materials for overproduction, right? So we can, if we have excess inventory, it might be because of overproduction, right? And we have to go, we move now from over, you know, excess inventory as a waste. Some of that might be a result of overproduction. So now we move that into the overproduction waste category, and we have some things we can tackle there, right? Processing work earlier or doing unrequired work, parts or reports, you know, just in case, or I know we always get five of these a week, so I'm just going to do them now and just have them sit here. So now you have excess inventory, you have stuff stored in areas, you have poor housekeeping and layout issues, and it's really because of overproduction sometimes. So this is important to understand. If you want to make sure you address the causes of overproduction, look at inappropriate performance measures. Are we measuring pieces made versus pieces overmade? You know, because we go the other way. I can tell you right now that if I have 50 pieces I need to make today and I only made 40, I know I'm going to hear about it. What if I made 55? Do I hear about that? So having inappropriate performance measures to address overproduction is something that you can look at. It also increases the number of times somebody's performing that task. If me performing this task has a certain risk score and the number of times I perform that increases that score by so much, obviously the more, if I'm overproducing, I'm increasing my risk of something happening. I'm also putting additional wear and tear on machines, tools and equipment. So that increases the PM schedule, which creates a bottleneck in maintenance. Maybe I don't need to hire three additional maintenance people. Maybe I just need to stop overproducing on, you know, 23% of our workstations, which increases the preventative maintenance schedule frequency. You see where I'm going? So this is exciting. This is kind of, I'm totally geeking out on this, but this is where you get to really have meaningful conversations in a language that these quality engineers, production engineers, and managers and workers really understand. It isn't safety speak and you're just, you know, sounding like a guru out there trying to get them to talk your language. You know, stop doing that. Understand this stuff. All right. And then the last one is defects. That's simple. That's defective work products or services. Well, one, not only is it bad because we got to throw it away, now we have additional waste. That introduces a level of risk that we don't talk a whole lot about, but it's a type of risk known as, maybe it's environmental, maybe it's local, but we're tossing stuff away, right? We're throwing stuff away. It's literal waste, and that's got to go somewhere. And we have to have additional trucks come in. We have maybe two additional dumpster pickups a week on our property that we don't need to have. Maybe we eliminate one of them. That's one less truck traveling through our lot, exposing our associates and their personal vehicles to potential issues. Maybe that just the whole carbon footprint of having one less truck a week at your facility, having to be on the road, right? I mean, that there's that type of risk as well. So it's not just individual injury, illness. There's other risk to safety risk or environmental risk that we can be looking at. So yeah, scrap and rework, customer complaints, you know, potential loss of business, but also equipment failure, capability issues related to defects. You get pieces jammed in a machine. Not only is that a defect, but now I've got to clear a jam. If you do have a jam clearing procedure and they're indicating that they have to conduct this procedure several times a shift, then you're probably seeing increased scrap and rework. So that increases waiting time, that increases maintenance issues, you know, excess wear and tear on equipment, right? So take a look at all of those things when, you know, I just kind of blew through all of them, but make sure that you're able to address all of those issues, each of these eight wastes. Remember, Tim P. Wood. Make sure that you remember that. That mnemonic should help. I mean, it's a long, you know, word, but transportation, inventory, motion, people, waiting, overprocessing, overproduction, and defects. Be able to speak this language. You're going to impress a lot of folks. You're going to be the safety hero, and you're going to be able to go along these on these walks with them. And you're going to be able to collaborate with them, not add on some additional safety stuff that doesn't quite fit in the conversation and the way you talk about it. You're able to put it in terms that they understand and in context of one of these eight wastes or more. So good luck to you on this. Let me know how you do with this. I'll post a little bit about this on the in the show notes. So make sure that you check the notes on this. And I want to hear what you have to say about anything related to lean and lean safety. Head on over to the Safety Pro Podcast community page. You will find a post for this episode there. Premium members get to collaborate and take part in the discussion. So think about becoming a premium member. I've done some videos for consultants to cover my success as a corporate consultant and share some of that information and tools. We did an entire 9-part video series on active shooter training and workplace violence prevention that you can use as a premium member. You can use all those videos and that information in your workplace to train your senior leadership staff and your workers. And, you know, we'll have more of that stuff coming. So I want nothing to come between you and me and you and other members of the community when it comes to sharing thoughts and ideas. It's a safe place for us to communicate. And you know that anybody else that's replying or communicating on the posts, they're a premium member. They're serious about creating a community of safety professionals. And that's all we want to do there. So I look forward to seeing you on the Safety Pro Podcast community site. And I will talk to you on the next Safety Pro Podcast.